How's everything going there?
Oh, it's we got down trees and, you know, a lot of people without power right now, and you know, a lot of destruction. So, but for the most part, pretty safe right now. Yeah. With a lot of things torn up and a lot of destruction.
Yeah. Shoot, man. And are you from Louisiana originally?
No, I grew up in Dumas, Texas, up in the Texas Panhandle.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, cool. We're definitely getting to your why, which I think will be cool during this time. I'll give you a little bit of basis for what we've done so far on the podcast series, and ultimately kind of the original concept was COVID hit. And as a company, we work with so many awesome coaches across the country that we were like, what can we do during this time? We're not going to raise money for people, but we still want to be connected with our clientele. And so we decided, let's tell coaches stories. Let's help tell stories. Let's grow our social media, and let's, you know, provide some good news to a world that has a lot of bad news right now. And so, even in a week like this, right, where it's been sports canceled and the storm coming through where y'all are at, for me, it's like, it's a good reminder, like, why are we doing this? Why am I doing this? And I think, you're a guy with, I mean, an incredible resume, but I think an incredible track record of, instilling character and goodness into your players. And so, yeah, I've been doing high school football because that's just like how we marketed for a long time. But now we're starting to launch a lot of the college baseball programs. Mm-hmm. Have you guys started your fundraiser with us?
Not yet. No, we have a conference call in the next week or two.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure it's coming up soon because a lot of the guys at your level are getting going. So. Yeah, so that's where it came about. And I think, for our time this morning, it would be really cool just to tell your story like at length. So, just to maybe like walk through each season of your life. I know you said, hey, I want to talk about my why. A lot of coaches do it for different reasons, and I want to, you know, share why I really coach, because some of them get it wrong. But I think, is what, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I grew up playing sports, this, that, and the other, but there's a lot of things that go into being a coach. You know, my dad was a coach, and he never got to play sports. So like me playing sports and him coaching me was very unique, because you don't hear that very often, a coach who didn't play. Mm-hmm. And he always dealt with that as a coach. Like, oh, are you really sure you never played? You don't maybe know as much. And so that was kind of his story, which of course affected mine. And I ended up becoming a coach after playing, throughout the years. But all that being said, I think it'd just be fun to jump right into it and kind of hear about your upbringing in the Panhandle and family life. And I'm sure playing sports growing up and kind of how that helped form, who you are now and how you got into coaching.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in my mother and my father, they got married when they were 17 and 18 years old. And my grandmother had to actually sign off on my mom getting married. And her father was the chief of police in the town that I grew up in for over 30 years. And the grandfather on that side was went into the military, then went to FBI school, was an FBI agent for a certain amount of time. And then he became a chief of police, like I said, for over 30 years. And then his daughter wants to get married when she's 17 years old. So you can picture that whole dynamic there. He's probably not very happy about his daughter getting married at 17 years old. And, you know, and she's just graduated high school, and my parents got married on June the 6th. So picture that. You're graduating high school in May, and then you're still 17 and you're getting married, and nobody's happy about that on both sides of the family, whether it was my father's parents or my mother's parents. And so they decided to get married, and you know, my father had been out of high school for 1 year, had been to college for a semester, but dropped out, and was a carpenter and a framer. You know, so you can just picture that manual labor type of worker. And the chief of police's daughter's getting married to the manual labor carpenter. And so you can picture that whole dynamic that nobody's happy about any of it. And so they got married, and then, you know, they had me, I guess a year and a half later when they were 19 and 20, at that junction in their life. And then they decided to start their own business when they were 20 and 21. And so that's something that's blown up to this day, you know, just because of their hard work and the character and the type of individuals that they are. When they got back from their honeymoon, they had $50 in their pocket. Nobody was going to help them. Grandparents or their parents were not going to help them because they you're going to try to figure this thing out on your own. You just did something that we did not agree with.
Yeah.
So, you know, are they really rooting for that to work out, or are in the back of their mind, they're sitting there saying, I told you so. But by the sheer work ethic of my parents, they were able to take $50 in their pocket and develop a company. And I'm 43 years old, and they've been married, I guess, 44, 45 years, whatever that is right there, to this day. And not only do they have one company, they have three different companies, and you know, didn't go to college, no college education, got married when they're 17 and 18 years old. And it shows you with what can happen in our country, if you're willing to sacrifice and work extremely hard and have a great attitude, what you can kind of develop with the American dream at your hands and at your disposal. And so nothing was ever handed to them. You know, they had parents really kind of rooting against them, per se. You could say probably not parents would want to ever say that, but you can see the thought process that would have come of that.
Yeah.
Having me when they're that age as well come along, and then finding out over the years that, you know, they didn't have anything, any money whatsoever. And then I took a special baby formula. So they had to go buy the baby formula, and they went without food during that time. So you start to hear those things and kind of their background and everything. And there was a time where they went and bought groceries for 2 weeks, and the rats in the rental house that they had worked in had eaten their groceries. And so they didn't have anything, and nobody was going to happen, let alone were they going to go ask their parents for any help just because of all of that going on. And so just picture that. That's my two parents, hardworking individuals who got where they're at in life based on just the sheer gumption about them and their work ethic. And I was blessed to be raised in that type of home and that environment. Growing up, you know, no matter what, you're going to church, you're going to be in that, you know, and just that whole environment. I have a younger brother, I guess 3.5, 4 years younger than me. But we were just blessed to be in a home that parents, you know, loved us tremendously. They didn't cut us any slack, because what they had gone through, they knew what it was going to take, and they knew what it was like to fight to eat. And I think there's a little bit about that. When you have to go through life, and there becomes a point in time where you've got to overcome adversity or overcome anything that's in front of you, to have the mindset that I've got to fight to figure out how to eat right now. There's a lot to that. And I know, you know, just that was kind of my upbringing, and never cut me any slack, you know, challenged me and everything that I was a part of to be the best I possibly be, taught me about what winning was, you know, winning wasn't on a scoreboard, winning wasn't on with how much money's in your pocket. Winning's not with, you know, how much power you have or fame you have. You know, winning's basically taking whatever your God-given talent has been given to you by the man upstairs and taking that and developing it to reach your full potential, not just in one aspect of your life, but in all aspects of your life. And so just very blessed to be in raised in that type of environment. Go off, you know, highly recruited college baseball player. Really was recruited. I don't know if they really knew. I wasn't that good. I was an average, you know, Division I baseball player, but was highly recruited, was an All-American in high school, all state in other sports as well, but decided to go and play baseball, and went off and played baseball at the University of Evansville for my first 2 years, and then got hurt, was able to get a medical red shirt and transitioned, went to junior college for a year, then finished playing at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. And, you know, my journey through all of that, you know, getting away from home and you know, it really, I got out of that environment and got into an environment where I was completely lost, you know, just doing things that are just not right in that. And I'm not, you know, bashful to say this. I was probably the biggest turd on my team. know, who I was and what I was doing and the nonsense. There's no reason I should be alive today based on the full foolishness that I did back during those years. And then got to a point in my life where when I got to, I was going to quit college baseball, you know, and that year, but leaving junior college of going to University of Arkansas Little Rock, I was going to quit college baseball. And luckily my parents again stepped in at that point in time. And so if you decide to make that decision, then you're going to pack your bags and you're going to hit the road and you're going to try to figure this thing out on your, you know, by yourself. And just because I wanted to go live the college life and go party and do all the things that are associated with being a college student, yet my parents didn't know that stuff was going on. But the wisdom that they had, they, you know, a lot of parents would have said, hey, if you're going to hang up your sport, because I used it, I lost the love of the game. I don't enjoy it anymore. I can't give every excuse under the sun. I used, hey, I can go get a job and help pay for my education to lessen the burden on you all. And luckily they stepped in at that point in time and said, if you make that decision, then you're going to pack your bags and be out on your own at this point. So very, very lucky to, you know, and my parents told me, you know, you didn't give yourself that ability to play that game. The man upstairs gave you that ability. And so you're going to play it as long as you possibly have. You will play that until all opportunities cease to exist. You don't get to make that decision on your own. You know, the game will make that decision for you because you give yourself that talent. You help develop it by working hard and doing the things that are necessary with that. And so just being able to have them. And then me not wanting to do it, you know, me throwing up the resistance, the fight, I'm not going to do it and everything. And then basically out of spite saying, I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go do it and get there. I'm going to find the guys on the team that think like I think. I'm going to go do all the foolishness and nonsense at that point in time. Every team has them, you know, birds of a feather fly together. It didn't take me long to find those individuals and we were off and running again. And it took two individuals. When I walked out of the cafeteria about, I don't know, 5-6 weeks into that fall semester there of my junior year at the University of Arkansas Little Rock, as I walk out, there's two guys that are sitting at the table and I don't see any of my other teammates, but those two, and I don't really want to go sit with them. They're the holy rollers on the team. And I just don't want to hear what they're talking about. But guess what? There's nobody else in the cafeteria usually that's packed out with my teammates. And so they're my teammates. I'm going to go sit with them. So I go and sit down with them. And one's on this side, one's on this side of me. And they're having a spiritual conversation at a point in time. So I can chime in, you know, because I was raised going to church. You know, I went on mission trips as a young person out of our country, you know. So I could speak the lingo. I could do all of those things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I jump in the conversation there. And in the middle of that conversation, one of them looks at me and says, hey, what, how do you know that? And so I get defensive on what do you mean? How do I know that? I know that because I was raised this way and everything. And then the next one looks at me and goes, really? So I don't know if I'd be messing around with an individual that could strike you down at any point in time. And that got me. That got me at that point in time because I got called out. And I couldn't finish my meal. And I couldn't finish my lunch. And I got up and put my tray up and went back to my apartment and shut the bedroom door. And when I came out of that bedroom door, 2 hours later, I said, I'm gonna be a different person. And, you know, the girlfriend that I had at that point in time, you know, I had to have a conversation with her. Like, I'm changing. I'm done with this foolishness. I'm done with this. And this is not who I am. It's not what I should be doing right now. And she didn't want to change. She didn't want to change. But so I had to drop her, you know.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is 2 weeks after all that transpired, I'm walking with those two guys, you know, Mark and Cliff, and I'm walking with them and around across campus. And I see a young lady across campus and I looked at both of them and I said, I'm going to marry that young lady one day. And they both look at me, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. She could be a serial killer. I mean, you know nothing about her. You're just an idiot for making that type of comment. And I said, just wait. And so it didn't take a week later, you know, I'm on a campus of a lot of students, you know, largest student body campus in Arkansas. I don't know if it is still today, but a lot of people think University of Arkansas has the largest student population. Well, it's not. It's University of Arkansas at Little Rock. And I don't know if it's still this day, but it was. So just picture that large of a campus student body wise. And so classes are in, you know, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. And so I walk around a building and I run smack dab into the middle of this young lady. And the chances of that happening are really slim and none because of how large the community. You may never see that person ever again. And we're the only two people that you can even see because classes are actually going on at that point in time. And it's just people in between classes. And so I run right in the middle of her and boom, face to face. And, you know, I tell her my name and I'm going to pick her up on Friday night. And you know, we're going to go out on our first date, kind of get your number. And kind of stunned her and kind of took, she got taken aback a little bit. Luckily, she gave me the phone number and we went out on our date, first date at that point in time. And I guess we've been almost married for 20 years now and got a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old daughter. And, you know, and I look at that all of that transpiring. And I knew at that point in time, in that junction of that fall semester, that I really wanted to get into coaching at that point in time. Because I knew the coaches that had been in my life had had a tremendous impact. And I also know that a coach can have more of an impact on you know, more individuals than the average in 1 year than they imagine, you know, the average American do their entire lifetime. And yeah. So it's just an avenue, and there's a great responsibility and accountability to be a part of something like that. And there's purpose and there's passion that's involved in that. And when you could, I truly believe everybody's searching for their purpose and everybody wants to take their passion and it become a part of their purpose. And then their life becomes extremely enjoyable. They're able to sleep easy at night because they know their why, they know what they were made for. And they're living that. They don't feel like they work at any day of their life because they're living out their purpose with a tremendous amount of passion. So all those things happened at that point in time. And it would not have happened if it wasn't for my parents basically making me go. And it wouldn't have been for those two individuals, Mark and Cliff, that sat next to me that day and called me out at that point in time. I don't think I would have ever graduated from college, let alone, you know, be an athletic director since I was the age of 26, but also you know, a college baseball coach, a head baseball coach at the age of 24. Think about that. That's like 2.5 years removed from that. And then, you know, my first coaching job happened in South Texas at Texas A&M University of Kingsville. And that was my junior college coach who he didn't even have any idea of all the nonsense that was going on for when I played for him. And then when I got there and started telling him, this is who I was, and this is what was going on, he couldn't believe it. You know, that's how, how it had become at that point in time. And so, you know, that's a little bit of that story
and
here at LSU Eunice and got an opportunity was at age 24. And my wife and I had been married, you know, a little over a year. And now, you know, we've been a part of an athletic program that had tremendous students come through here and helped us attain what we've been able to attain.
Yeah. Well, crazy, man. What a story. I mean, starting with your parents, right? Like your parents, and I'm intrigued, like what kind of business do they have?
Well, they started their own construction firm.
Cool.
That, you know, for nothing. And, you know, the Valero's largest refinery in the world is in that county where they grew up. So the largest dairies are in that county they grew up and, you know, just developed it, you know. And so you know, built apartment complexes they own and just went from $50 to where they are today.
So I think it'd be cool to take like pieces out of each one of those because out of like each, you know, phase of life, because you talked about your parents and then you talked about your playing experience. You talked about, you know, your teammates, like introducing you to a real faith and then you know, meeting your wife and then getting into coaching at a super young age. So going back to the parents, I think what stands out to me is this idea that they made you stay in it. And there's different parenting styles and whatnot. And you, like you said, you have two kids. You might hear my baby cry in the background periodically because we just had our newborn just a handful of weeks ago. So I'm learning on the job really quickly. And I think as a parent, you wonder like, when do I give my kid autonomy? And I think it correlates to coaching too. Like when, how much, you know, autonomy do you give to your players as opposed to like, when are the moments when you're like, no, you're doing this. Like you were gifted with this. You're supposed to do this. You're called to it or whatever. Like, how do you kind of discern that as a coach? And really as a parent too, because I think a lot of coaches who will listen to this are parents. And so it goes hand in hand. Does that make sense?
No, it does. I think the first and foremost thing is to know what are the decisions that you're trying to help your young person make? And what is their motivation for making that decision? You know, so you're trying to figure that out. I'll tell you this, within our team, the ownership of the team is the players. You know, I always tell them, this is not my team. This is not the school's team. This is your team, and the team will do as possible. But you are right. There's times where you have to sit down. You know, gray hair is the crown of wisdom. And I've always sought out people that are a lot older than me, because people that are a lot older than me who have lived on this earth a lot more years have been through every possible scenario that you would ever come up with. And I think as a young person, you're trying to make your own way. You're trying to prove everyone that you have your stuff together. And as an older person, you always look back and say, hey, well, hang on. You know, I know right now, you know, I'm 43 years old. I can look back today. I think I have some idea about something, but I also look back and say, when I was 40, I thought the same thing. And now I look back and say, I didn't really know much when I was 40. Or I can go back to when I was 25, or 26 and 24, when I started coaching here at LSU Eunice, I thought I knew something. And now I look back and I didn't know anything at that point in time. how many things that I did during that time, I would do different today. But it took me some time, even during that time of, cause I wanted to prove myself. You know, I wanted to do that. And I think as a younger person, a lot of times you're so anxious to try to prove yourself that sometimes you don't slow down, you don't step back and try to ask for wisdom from the people that are there. But as far as your children, you've got it. They learn through mistakes, and they have to want them to fail. Nobody wants a young person to fail, but sometimes it comes to that because that gets their attention to say, you know what? I may not know everything that I think I know, and I might need to try to reach out and try to get help from people around me that have been on this earth for a lot longer than I have.
And I think that's an awesome segue into your buddies on the team I think what I took out of that is you need to seek out mentorship, mm-hmm. you know, in a faith sense, we call it discipleship, but in a coaching sense, you say, I need a mentor. I need to lean on someone who's gone before me, who has experienced this. Yeah, maybe not in the same field or with the same group of kids, or maybe there wasn't social media back then, but there were the same issues, right? And so you can lean on them. And I think finding the gray hairs is super, super important. We need that. We all need that, regardless of age. But then, like you said, they speak something into your life that, you know, a lot of times helps change you in a better way. And that has mistakes come alongside that. Like you're saying, like, it's tough as a parent to allow your kids to make the mistake, but your friends, you're sitting next to your friends. You don't want to sit with them because you're like, these guys are going to Bible thump me. Probably. I don't want to hear it. I've already heard it before. I grew up with this. You sit down, they kind of Bible thump you, but in a way that really gets your attention. I think, again, if we correlate this to coaching, there's moments, like you said, where your mistakes become present. They're right in front of your face. And you're like, okay, I was in the wrong. And there's a sense of real conviction, which you had. You like closed the door in your room. When I've heard many of these stories, right, of coming to faith, where there's a radical change because of conviction of the wrong that was done. And the right, you know, you should do. So talk to me about conviction in coaching. Talk to me about, it would be cool maybe to think of moments with players, especially at the JUCO level. I know you guys are high end JUCO, and we'll get into all the success here in a second, but I'm sure you've seen some pretty radical change stories, not only in your own life, but amongst your players, the light bulb going off, realizing what the heck am I doing with this talent, and then a change that might be forever. Does anything stand out like that?
I can tell you this. You know, we've seen six teams dogpile at the end of the year, and so every single time that we've
that's had national, that, folks. That's national dogpile, not a regional, or that's national.
We've never dogpiled at any of those levels because that's not winning all that of the year. But I've seen those teams, and we've gotten back to campus, and you've had a group that's celebrating when you get back to campus. And then I always set those teams down, and I always ask them, do you feel anything different today than you felt a week ago or a year ago? And the kids think that that's a trick question. Of course. No. Do you really? Do you really feel different? And they don't. And then you're able to segue into that, because the only people that remember championships really are the people that actually did it themselves. You know, I mean, can you remember who won the NFL, the Super Bowl championship 3 years ago? Now, you might be able to go back and kind of think through it. Like, who won the World Series 2 years ago? You might be able to go. I mean, you have to think about that. That's not. Yeah. And so when you're able to say, guys, the things that matter the most are the relationships that you build, because we're all in this life together, and we all need to lock arms together, and we all need to pull with some synergy all in the same direction, not apart from one another. And so when you see those, in the relationship building is the most important thing, whether it's in a sport or it's in your everyday life, we are made for relationships. And so when you see those young people that start to realize that, hey, that ring that you're going to get in about 6 or 8 months. I mean, I've got 6 championships. I don't even know where they're at. You know, there's something or a safe somewhere in my house. But I don't look at those. They're not out and about, and you know, I don't wear them. You know, I actually, a lot of times, look at individuals that are wearing those rings. And I'm like, you guys have lost it. You're not getting it for the biggest picture. And I see coaches a lot of times that they're coaching. You know, believe me, there's not too many people that are as competitive as I am. You know, I don't let my 13-year-old or 10-year-old daughter beat me in anything. I'm highly competitive. I demand excellence out of every one of our players and everything that they're a part of, just not out on the field. It's in the weight room. It's in the classroom. You know, I demand excellence every single part of it, because I'm more concerned about those young people and who they are going to become as a husband and father 10, 15 years down the line. Because that's going to tell us how successful our program actually was, not because we won the last game of the year. And people, and that's why I say winning's not on a scoreboard. You know, it's taking those young people and doing the things that we were talking about. But I see coaches all the time, they're chasing that. You know, they're chasing, they think it's the ultimate, and it's like way, way up here. Now, we got to have goals, okay? But let me back up. I'm not a goal setter. I don't ever say, okay. I think we should be mission related. I think because set goals, sometimes you actually limit yourself in what you actually could achieve. Whereas if you set your mission, this is your mission, all kinds of things fall underneath that. And now you can attain things that you never thought you could attain. But I see these coaches out here, they're chasing these championships that are won on the field. And I mean, they're compromising their integrity, their character, the way they treat the kids from time to time. And they're using it for their own, maybe they're using it for their own career and their ladder for their career and what they want to try to attain. And I see that all the time. And I'm looking at it going, they've lost all concept of why we are truly here and in this coaching profession. And it's in the coaching profession is to have an impact and to take your young people and let's make sure they're good husbands and fathers down the road, because those are the things that pass the test of time, not some championship ring or some trophy that you attained at some point. But we need to try to attain those things. You know,
yeah.
We try to work our tail off and do all we can to reach our full potential in those. And that's why I'm concerned a lot about, you know, when I watch a coach, I'm always asking, hey, why did you get into coaching? And it's very intriguing to hear those answers. And sometimes they don't have any idea. You know, sometimes I was a college athlete. You know, I know the game. And because I know the game, I would be really good at coaching it. Well, you don't get into the coaching profession because of that. Just for a paycheck. You know, you don't get into coaching for a paycheck because there's very few coaching jobs you get paid a lot of money for at a Power 5 conference school. So you don't get in for, you don't get into it because you're competitive, you know, because if you get into it because you're competitive, then you're going to compromise your morals and your integrity and your character. Because now winning becomes an all cost measure for you. You don't get into it for any of those reasons, for money, for competitiveness, for a job. I mean, go get a different job. You get into it because you can have an impact on young people. And when you start to understand that, and you start to understand that you demand excellence out of them in all areas of their life, then what you're teaching is going to pass the test of time, you know, and now that kid can teach his children, those children teach their children, and now you've made your team or your program into a life-changing type of program. And I think that's what we truly should be in the coaching profession for during this time. Not during the time, for all time.
Yeah. Yeah. But like you said, shoot, especially now where it is tough too with COVID. And like I said, I want to get into kind of your history as well, because although, and it is pretty fascinating, like I've had people on the, almost everyone on the podcast has been a state champion or like some pretty high level, and the trophies are sitting behind them. and it's pretty interesting. Like you got a couple of diplomas maybe, but it's a pretty humble setting in a really beautiful way. But so I read an article on you about, and there was a line in it, and I was like, whoa, that was a killer line. So that you had a reputation for building permanent character, which I don't know if that's a phrase that y'all use or if that was given to you, but I thought that really stood out to me. Permanent character. And you're talking about, and I will say it now, this is normally like how you would open an interview. So like, we have Jeff Willis with us. He's won 6 NJCAA national championships, over 800 wins, 50 wins a year almost on average. Like, you know all these numbers. You were the, you know, 2018 College Baseball Hall of Fame Coach of the Year. Like, that's national, like all levels of college baseball. So these are tremendous achievements. And you could really get wrapped up in that. And I'm sure sometimes you read an article and you're like, that's amazing. I can't believe that we are a part of that. Cause it is pretty phenomenal achievements. And you're 43, like you're not like a 70-year-old coach. Like you're saying, you started coaching, you know, a year after getting married. So it's real. I remember meeting you at one of the conferences and like, they're like, yeah, this guy, he wins every year. And I'm like, what do you mean every year? How old is this guy? He looks really young. So all that being said, I would imagine, and I could be wrong, but like there were moments along the way where stuff was suggested to you. Like, I don't know, like stuff that probably wasn't correct, you know, like the will to win. Like you said, you're going to try to beat your 13-year-old in backyard basketball probably. So it's like, that competitiveness, like you said, can become an issue if there aren't like boundaries and healthy like things put in place to make sure they don't. So how do you navigate? A lot of coaches want to win. There's only like one that wins at the end of the year in most of these things. And so for coaches that aren't going to win the championship at the end of the year necessarily, like how do they stay in their convictions, and how have you been able to like keep this idea of permanent character throughout your time coaching?
Well, I think it's important for you to have a circle. You know, you were talking a little bit about it earlier. You have a circle of coaches that you can bounce ideas off of, that you can pick their brain, they can pick yours, in an environment that's non-judgmental. That's key. But the other part of this is to understand that, you know, you read off all that stuff, which is, you know, is in the past.
Yeah.
And talk about, you know, we don't live in the past. You know, we don't live in the present. We want to make sure we're where our feet are. We don't live in the future. So we can learn from the past. We need to live in the present, and we can prepare for the future. And I think that's a reminder to me each and every day when my feet hit the ground. My feet hit the ground the same way as anybody else's feet hit the ground, as long as I'm still alive that day. And I put my pants on one leg at a time like anybody else. I'm a son of a carpenter, you know, and so, I mean, a carpenter and a parents that got married at 17, 18 years old had $50 in their pocket. And so, you know, it's always a reminder of making sure that each day you wake up with a level of humbleness and humility that says, I'm going to tackle this day. It doesn't matter what you've accomplished in the past, because that's all in the past. Just be where your feet are, and don't even look forward to the future. I see it all the time, and especially young people. You know, or if you were working a manual labor job, that you would start to work. And a lot of times somebody can't wait for their lunch break. or they couldn't. I get off at 5 o'clock. Can't wait to get off of work. Or how about this one? We've all used this one. I can't wait for vacation. Can't wait.
To yeah.
So we all, and we all are guilty of this, of looking far into the future. We have to prepare for it. There's no doubt about that. But the times that we're like, I can't wait to get on vacation, that thought process a lot of times makes us miss the smallest moments and opportunities that we could either be having an impact on someone that's right sitting right next to us that we might not even know. We're missing the opportunity to build relationships to the standard of what we'd actually want them to reach. And so being able to take that time of you know, the past, none of that, just the here and now, be where your feet are and prepare for the future and not jump into the future, keeps us all grounded in what we're doing. As far as, you know, championships and stuff like that and the competitiveness, we all have to be driven. We all have to be driven. But I say I'm not a goal setter. I want to be a mission related individual. And I want to have young people that come in. A quick story. The young person that there's about five individuals that players that have been through here that have had a tremendous impact on who we are today. And one happened in 2006, and that was the first year we won the first national championship. Mm-hmm. And so at that point in time, you know, a player could transfer out from a junior college at semester break and be immediately eligible to play at Division I school. Well, now they can't do that. Well, at that point in time, we had a young person on our team. His name was Kyle Swear. And so Kyle's one of our best players on our team. And LSU, Coach LaValle was the coach over at LSU at that point in time. And they had an opening, and they had a need. They had some players go down with injury, and they needed to find a really good player to transfer in at Christmas time and help them out. And so what happened was those coaches over at LSU started calling his high school coach. They're not calling me. They're calling the high school coach, and they're trying to circle around behind me to get Kyle to transfer over there without making a call. Now, Kyle had signed in the early signing period with University of Louisiana Monroe. Well, at that point in time, the head coach at that point in time at UL Monroe would had been an assistant coach for Coach LaValle at some point in time. So Coach LaValle had called him and said, hey, we got to take him, you know. And so the recruiting coordinator at UL Monroe, he's not very happy about that because he worked his tail off to recruit Kyle and got him to sign. And so he calls me and says, hey, you need to have a heads up. This is going on. Whoa, I'm kind of caught. Next phone call comes from his high school coach and said, you don't know this is going on right now, but this is going on in the behind the scenes. I said, okay. So I call Kyle into my office, and he's sitting, you know, right across me in the chairs right here. And I know what Kyle's dream is. Kyle's dream is to go play for LSU and go play in Alex Box Stadium with 10,000 plus fans there, chance to go to Omaha, chance to win a national championship each and every year. And so I'm wishing him luck. I'm happy for you. I'm, you know, this is your dream. Basically, because I want him to feel at ease with what is transpiring. And I'm not going to talk him out of doing something like that, because if we're in it for the right reasons, we want people to reach what they aspire to do. And so we're talking through this. Well, Kyle puts his head down and went silent in my office for 10, 15 seconds. Kind of odd silence at that point in time. And then Kyle all of a sudden looks up, and he looks right at me, and he points at me, and he says, I would never leave you hanging. And I get emotional sometimes talking about this story, because, whoa, hang on, Kyle, you're not leaving me hanging. This is your childhood dream. And if you don't go play for LSU right now, because you signed a scholarship at UL Monroe, you will never play for LSU. And that's what you've wanted to do since you were way big. And I would never leave you hanging, coach. And I would never leave any of my teammates hanging. I'm not going to do it. And so, Kyle, hang on here. You know, you're talking 19 years old. Hang on here. This is what your dream is. You know, you want them to, you know, he kept on. And I said, Kyle, you've got to think about it. I said, Kyle, have you heard from them yet? He goes, coach, I have not, but my high school coach has called me. And I said, well, you are, they're going to call you and they're going to offer you a scholarship and they're going to tell you, because they'd already told both other coaches that, hey, he's going to play every game, start every game for us, for the LSU Tigers. And we have a chance to go on just the whole rigmarole by recruiting the kid and what they can say. And so we get out to practice that day, And so we always stretch as a team. Then we come together, we say a quick prayer, and then we set practice in motion. So I do that and we get done with it. Kyle goes, "Coach, can I speak with the team real quick?" "Yes, Kyle." And so at that point in time, the gossip and the rumors had already gone through the entire team at that point in time. You can imagine, like, he's going off and he's our best player and, you know, all the thoughts of your team out there. And I'm not going to address it because I don't feel a need to address it. Because he still needs to have the ability, if he wants to make that decision, to go and live his childhood dream. And so he gets up there and he starts talking to the guys that, "Surely, guys, you have heard this. I've heard you guys kind of whispering," and he's talking through this. And then he looks at them and he looks at me and he says, "Again, I would never leave him hanging. And I would never leave any of you guys hanging out here right now. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to go win the first national championship in the history of this program." That right there, and that group erupted. You know, this is, you know, that team erupted at that point in time. And you knew like, they're going to do it. There's nothing is going to get in the way of what just transpired. And so that young person, and the think about it, his character and his conviction of what he had in front of him, and he was willing to give up his childhood dream. Because he went to UL Monroe. He was all conference up there. He was drafted in, I don't remember, 12th, 13th round, somewhere maybe a little later than that. Went and played professional baseball 2 or 3 years. Had a great career up there, led him in home runs and all that kind of stuff. But he threw away his childhood dream based on the type of individual he was and the conviction and character that he had for his coaches and his teammates. That's when you know the relationships that you're building are what they should be at that point in time. I don't know if I was 19 years old. I don't think I would have made that decision. I don't think you would have made that decision. I don't think too many people would have made the decision that he made at that point in time. And that story, and every time I see him and just the emotions that come into me, and it reminds me of how privileged we are to be able to have a small impact in these kids that are coming through our doors. And it's when you hear the phone calls and the wedding invitations and the text back and the emails back and all that kind of stuff. And you know, with your fundraiser, like last year we did the E-Teams fundraiser. We had a past player donate money on there. He did it anonymously, but you know, I can get in there and I can see exactly who did it. He posted that anonymously and he was a volunteer coach somewhere. And I knew he made no money whatsoever. Like for him to make that donation, I went, "Whoa. That's not someone that has the money to donate anything." He donated $100. $150 for him was maybe his whole food for the entire month. You know, and last year on that fundraiser as well, we had a young person that donated on it that got cut from our team like 2 years prior. And I went, he donated money and he got cut from our team. I had to have the tough conversation. "You're not going to make it on our team, bud. Your ability's not up to par. You might need to go somewhere else and play." And he donated money to our program, and he did not ever officially step foot on our field to play a game. He went to another junior college and played for them. Yeah, he donated money back to us. Those are things when you look at it and go, maybe we're doing a little something right with what we're trying to do here. And it's not about wins and losses, and it's not about championships, not about dog piles. It's not about some championship ring or about some trophy. None of those types of things are out here. It's about the relationships that you're building through this time and what they're going to be as a husband and father 10, 15 years down the road.
Really powerful story. Like you're saying, you're getting emotional. I'm like, I got the hair hanging up on the back of my neck. I mean, the fact that kind of kicked it off too. And like, that was your first out of now six. And that moment, not that it was the only moment, but that moment was super impactful. You talked about like, be where your feet are. And so the last thing I want to talk about is really this idea, like, so this kid decided my feet are here. I could move them elsewhere. And like you said, and there's times in life where, and I think God kind of does this in all honesty, like we could make different choices, like, and maybe God will bless any of it, you know, like it's not like this is the only school I can play at, but for whatever reason, he decided my feet are here, I'm staying here. And it impacted a lot of other people on the team. And the story still carries a ton of weight and power. So everyone's asked you this and thought, and you've probably I would imagine you've had conversations with your wife about opportunities, like 18 years, 19 years. I mean, you guys were 21-0 starting this year. You guys are winning almost 50 games a year, and you're crazy successful. People know you're a good coach, and they've probably been like, hey, here's a foot in the door at Division I level or professionally or wherever. Sure, you talked about your network of your sphere of guys working with you and that support you get from them. I'm sure one or two of them at a time has been like, hey, you should think about this opportunity. So why not? Like, and why here? Like, why have you decided my feet are here, I'm keeping them here?
Well, I think you have. When I was 24 and I got the job here at LSU Eunice, and then when I was 26 and I became the athletic director, I found the search folder for when they hired me. And I went through that search folder and I looked at it and I went, I might have been the most least qualified. And I actually said to myself, these people didn't know what they were doing. Like, they missed, these individuals were on this list. They didn't know what they were doing. But then I step back and I say, you know what? There's probably a divine plan involved in what's happening here. I have a tremendous administration here that support us and get why we do what we do. The grass is not always greener on the other side. I get that question asked of me a lot. There has been opportunities. But I also know where I'm at today is where I'm supposed to be at right now. Could that change in 2 weeks? It could. You know, I could be out of coaching in 2 weeks. You know, I don't want to be, but I could. I could get my life taken in a different direction. I don't want that to happen. But you know, I know where I'm at today is where I'm supposed to be. And a lot of times people get caught up into thinking the grass is greener on the other side. But I go back to when I was 24 and I got the job. I got a phone call from a Division I coach. We're talking. He's talking about our players, and we're talking. He goes, hey, what's your goal? So my young, dumb self at that point in time, you know, I'm not young anymore. I'm still dumb. But my thought process was, I said this. I want to win quick, and I, you know, get out of here. That's what I said. And he, on that other end of that phone, he went, really? Wow. Okay. And he goes, that's what you want to do. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, college baseball, I mean, that's what you do. You win games and then you go and you do these things. And he goes, hey, you might need to think about that a little bit. And so the next month, 6 weeks, whatever it was, I'm pondering why I answered that question like that. Because that's not why I got into coaching. But even my thought process at that point in time, the pridefulness that was inside of me was causing me to think that. And then I started to say, why did I answer that question like that? That's not why I got into coaching, but why did I answer it like that? And then it came to me and said, well, first and foremost, you would have a lot more people in the stands, fans watching you. And the other one was, you might make a lot more money. And then I realized at that point in time, those are two prideful thought processes that's not why you got into coaching. Do I know if I'm going to retire as the head baseball coach at LSU? I have no idea, okay? Yeah. There's only one individual that knows that. And I know where I'm at right now is exactly where I'm supposed to be at. And each and every day, I get an opportunity to have an impact on young people, and I don't take it for granted, because there's a lot of people that would want to be in my shoes and in my job right now. And I have to wake up with a sense of humility and a sense of grace as well to understand that where I'm at right now, someone gave me an opportunity when I was 24 years old, and it was this institution. And I owe a lot to where I'm at today because of the institution that's sitting here with the administrators from when I started here to our administrators that are currently here right now. And so I don't know how to answer that question other than I know where I'm at is where I'm supposed to be at right now. And there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate working with you, man. I know that the school appreciates you being there. And a lot of coaches are always looking for what is next, the next recruit, the next school, the next opportunity. And like you're saying, I think it's a good reminder for everyone. Like, no matter what, you know, I've been with the same company since I graduated college. And we all have thoughts like, oh, maybe I should have done this or that or that, you know, but it's like, this is where you are right now. And I think everyone could hear that even if you could be interviewing at a new schools, you know, if you're a coach listening to this right now, but where are you right now in this moment? And who are the people right in front of you? Those are the people you're supposed to be, you know, taking care of and serving. And so, dude, thanks so much for hopping on, especially with everything going on there. And I'm glad that you're in your office and, you know, you guys are hanging in there with the storm. But we definitely appreciate you, that E-Team sponsor. We appreciate working with your school. And I trust and I'm always encouraged by these times. And I trust that it's going to encourage a ton of people. So thanks so much for hopping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate what you guys do for all the coaches and players that are out there as well.